Former UNLV quarterback and current voice of the Rebels, Caleb Herring, joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Time to talk some football, get into a little more college basketball, wrapping up the season. There will be no smashing my lady, Angel Reese. I am so much about Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese going to the WNBA. God, I'm excited. And this draft's going to be great. Caleb, what's going on? Caleb Herring's with us.
Oh, you know, the same old, same old. Get ready for the most exciting time in sports. I guess March Madness wrapping up, NBA playoffs around the corner. Still so much excitement. Postseason basketball is, I think, where I really lock in on the NBA nowadays. So I'm excited about that. But, yeah, it's a fun time right now. Fired up about UNLV just coming off the spring game. It's pretty cool.
Last week might have been your best appearance ever on the show. I mean, you really brought it on Angel Reese. I don't know why DeMond's laughing. I mean, it was good. Really good, strong take. I think you carried the momentum over to the spring game. I don't know if everyone saw the setup who was in the stadium, but Caleb and I were on the mic, and we were kind of supposed to do a little play-by-play and analysis, and then I look up. I was like, Caleb took over. He was feeling it, man. You really did a great job, and I told you after that via text. I was like, You carried us. But what do we see in this game? Because I want to – you know what? I'm just going to throw it out there. I didn't have to throw out much about Angel Reese. Starting quarterback for UNLV for the game in Houston, the season opener. Go.
Ah, that's a tough one to answer, man. Oh, my God. If you watched the spring game, and if I said based on what I saw playing, I would say Haj Malik Williams would be the starting UNLV quarterback. But the kicker here is there is a whole star quarterback that has not even suited up yet, in Matt Sluka. So I don't know would be the most appropriate answer. And it's the most confident I don't know that I've ever said on this show. Like, I don't know, and I'm glad that I don't know that, because what I saw, even in the limited way that a spring showcase is set up these days, and with what I think is Haj Malik Williams' best tool not being able to be on display because he wasn't live. Quarterbacks weren't live during the spring showcase. So I think him not being able to run and improvise with his legs takes away what he actually is the best at, I think, in the quarterback room. So we don't even know what that looks like yet. But based on what I saw, he did good enough to have me confident that the Rebels will have another winning season this year. And that was based on what I saw in his first, you know, spring with the program. So, and then Sluka obviously comes in when he gets here in the fall with a resume of his own that he might be competing for the job as well. So I don't know. I really don't know, and I'm excited to see how this iteration of the UNLV offseason quarterback battle goes, because I think the winner will have a very successful season with UNLV.
Caleb, I know it's just a spring game, but for someone who wasn't able to attend, how did the defense look? Because I think that that's something that Barry Odom, obviously last year, but this year I'm expecting the team to really build on that and be even better on defense.
Well, first of all, shame on you for not being there, DeMond. You are the one that I always know will be there and rowdy for anything UNLV, and I miss your presence there. That's number one. Number two, for the defense, UNLV, I think, and it's been my longstanding theory that defenses are always ahead of offenses in spring games, which was the case last year, and it was much more obvious and apparent last year, I think, that the defense was a little bit ahead as far as installing and developing that system. But this year, I would say what I saw was a much more relaxed and conservative defense. It didn't seem like they were in a hurry to prove anything. It didn't seem like defensive coordinator Mike Scheer was overly anxious about what he was getting in, what he was seeing from his team. So I think they were very much conservative in the way they approached the spring game. They ended up winning, if anybody counts the tallies of the score. That, I mean, it's not like they were not a big deal.
It's but weird scoring system, Caleb.
Yeah, weird scoring system. It's a terrible scoring. Slightly slanted towards the defense to win, but I digress. But I think what I saw from the defense was a defense that was comfortable executing the system. Whereas last year, you could feel they were trying to find the rhythm in the system. It looked like whether it's the personnel that's here now or just year two with the core group, which is the linebacking core, which they're returning really two all-conference linebackers in the inside with Woodard as well as McDuffie. So those two being back and sort of the leaders on defense, the voices on defense being back, I think the defense looked more comfortable in what they were doing and in how they're executing the schemes out there. So that's what I would say just looking at it. It was a much cleaner spring showcase on both sides of the ball, but particularly on defense.
How fired up are you to see the progression of one linebacker in Blessing? Go ahead and do it. Show off again. Blessing.
Blessing Alualu Tuiolamotu, the freshman, redshirt freshman phenom, who is very excitable. He's very exciting to watch, even in his freshman campaign last year. He got some reps in limited time, obviously, with the way Woodard and McGuffey performed it, and Tompkins. He wasn't required to play, which is something that Mike Shear was looking for because he was high on him during the fall. He was very excited about the young linebacker and Blessing Alualu Tuiolamotu. There, I did it fast, too, just to put the icing on top. But they were excited about him and his development. And I think he took another step in that development. Again, he won't have to necessarily be the guy yet behind Woodard and McGuffey, but I'm excited about him. He made a negative play, got in, he's gotten stronger, he's getting faster. He has a nose for football, and I think at linebacker that's mandatory. Something you can't quite tangibly say, you know, how to explain it, but he just finds his way to be around the football more often than not. And he put a little bit of that on his plays in the spring game. So excited to track his progress, maybe even seeing him more in a special teams role just to get him out there and see what kind of impact he can make while he's playing in the number two or three role. I don't know where he ends up on the depth chart, but we'll see.
Coming out of the UNLV football spring showcase, and maybe Adam's going to get to this in a second, I'm shocked that everyone, aside from me in the room, doesn't have more questions about the quarterback position. I figured that would be the deal. Do you have one?
That was his long answer.
Okay. I have a follow-up, and this is going to be the worst thing I've ever done on Sports Talk Radio.
Oh, boy.
I admit it's going to be really stupid. I never judge a book by the cover. I especially learned this from fighting, boxing, and MMA. Did you walk over to Matthew Sluka, the Holy Cross transfer?
Did I walk over to him?
Yeah, did you talk to him at all? Did you meet him?
I didn't talk to him. I didn't, you know, do that whole thing that he was kind of in his element. I did see him up close and in person, yes.
Okay, so you took a look at him. I walked up to him. I talked to him. Seemed like a nice guy. I don't know. I think I was expecting like something. This is going to sound really cheesy, like sort of built up and statuesque, right? And this is where it's going to get bad. Like, I look down at his legs. He's rushed for 2,500 yards the last 2 years. His long runs the last 4 years at Holy Cross, and I know it's another level, but 57-76, 66-70. And the reason I thought of this, too, was there was someone there watching who didn't know a whole lot about UNLV football but knows football, and he was like, hey, what's his 40 time? And I'm like, I don't know. When I walked over, I looked down because he had shorts on, and I'm like, those are kind of regular legs.
Didn't have the makings of a varsity athlete.
Am I an ass for like looking at his bod and like expecting something?
The only reason I take that with a grain of salt you have the calves of a Greek god. So I like your calves compared to anybody's calves.
That's not what the comparison was.
No.
But you
that's
know, you, when you go on the football field, you see guys, and you're like, oh, like I see Antonio Doyle, and I'm like, whoa, that guy's like 25. And he looks like an NFL outside rusher.
Steve went over and like rolled up his pants, and he's like, "Look at mine, huh?
No,
bring it."
He's just such an interesting prospect. A guy who rushes for that many yards and has that many long runs. I'm super fired up to see him whenever we get to see him first roll out there in late July, early August.
I'm fired up to see him too, and I'm fired up to see the transformation of the guy because this is like a demeanor thing. I watch demeanors. You look at calves, I look at demeanors. I like his demeanor of what I've seen from him on the field. He's a fiery competitor, right? Like that's what I see him as on the field. But, and I don't know what the bias was when I saw him in person. It was like, I expected some bravado, kind of out there. He was not that. He was kind of chill, laid back. I don't know how else to put it, but I don't know why I expected to see a fiery person spectating. Like, what was he supposed to do? Now that I'm saying it out loud, I'm excited to see that switch get flipped on, because I think he's a very competitive person, and I can relate to that. So I'm excited to see how that translates into a quarterback competition. Because essentially, what he was doing this spring was scouting his competition, and maybe lighting his own competitive fire to be ready to go come fall. So I'm excited to see how he looks, how fast he is, maybe in person. And how that, you know, the lack of defined calves impacts his running ability at this level. Obviously, he put the numbers up in his previous stint. How much does it translate? I think just to make a point about the quarterback room now for UNLV as a whole, both of these quarterbacks add an element to the offense that wasn't there before. And there's other things about this offense. I think if you're expecting this go-go to look like last year's go-go, you are in for a pleasant surprise this year. And this is based on the snippets that I saw in the spring showcase. I think there's the makings of a good sequel if you're talking about offensive production.
But he should probably get in the weight room, was what you're saying. Do some squats.
He's fine.
Some calf raises.
He's fine. Because you're right. You do look at demeanor and leadership skills and personality and stuff like that. If you do want, go ahead.
No, I was gonna just ask. I mean, you kind of mentioned it with just it was a cleaner spring game than we saw last year. What did you kind of just see in terms of pacing and that sort of thing as compared to like where the program is now as compared to where they were when, you know, last year Barry Odom was just taking over. We didn't know much about him or his program. Like, what did you see about those things, maybe between plays, between drills, that sort of thing?
I think the tempo of play to play, like get snap or end of play to the snap, was much quicker and cleaner offensively and in turn defensively. I think a lot of times when you say tempo and teams going fast, you look at the offense and say, oh, the offense is going fast. It's easier to go fast as an offense. But as a defense, to then get lined up to a team that's going fast, I saw both units handle being fast together. And that, I think, was a good sign of how clean things were, how well install went, and how confident they are in the schemes. They were able to not only line up offensively fast, but get lined up to those formations defensively as well. So that was one thing that I saw and noticed. The ability to play... I guess, clean with each other, to be physical, but clean together. Like, there's a way to practice hard. Even when you're scrimmaging each other, you're still scrimmaging each other. And the guys were getting to position to make tackles or to be in position to make blocks much cleaner and effectively. So there wasn't a lot of chaos and hits that you didn't see coming. Now, there was a big hit on a receiver coming across the middle. It's just a tight window. You can't avoid all of it. But I think there's a lot more clean tackling. Even though there's some missed tackles too, but there's a lot more guys being in position to make tackles the right way. And I think that's how you can see clean practices kind of developing. There was some penalties. The officials threw their flags. That's what they're supposed to do. And it still is spring. And there was a couple of instances where younger receivers, especially the freshman, Damian McDaniels, needed a little bit of help getting lined up, but that's to be expected. It's his second week on campus. He's still getting familiar with things. But for the most part, everything was structurally clean on both sides of the ball.
Caleb Herring's with us. Last couple things on the spring showcase, and we'll get to a little college basketball. Caleb, of course, a former quarterback for the Rebels. On offense, I've been saying it all spring, and then I was even more impressed in spring practice or the spring showcase. I think the tight ends are going to hit a different level this year in terms of use as weapons. And we saw it from Kaleo Ballengai last year, a lot of key third down catches. Then you're like, why did they bring in another tight end / fullback / H-back in this kid from K-State, Christian Moore? What did you see?
I saw a dynamic body. I saw a willing blocker. As we know, if you want to play with UNLV offensively, you need to be able to block. I saw somebody who was more than willing to put his face in and create some running space for his running backs. But then I saw an athlete as well, which is a Swiss Army knife. Without giving too many, he made a catch where he plucked the ball off the turf, and you just don't see tight ends make catches like that. He and Belunga have great hands as tight ends, so they are valid weapons in every facet of the game, which is what you want from every player, really, to be versatile and be able to stay on the field for whatever the situation dictates. But they give you a little bit more flexibility to have tight ends and to have depth at tight end with your personnel and formations. Like I said before, There's ways that the offense can blossom. From the infancy that we saw last year of the go-go offense, I think guys like Christian Moore and Kaleo and his development at that tight end position just add another element. The tight end has long been my best friend. Like if you have a good tight end, you got a chance in football. And I think the tight end play for UNLV is going to do wonders, especially when you got weapons like Ricky White on the edges and Jacob Jesus occupying so much of the coverage. Tight end mismatches are a key to watch in every ball game.
Boy, I'm going to do it again, and I will.
Who's got bad calves?
No. another tight end in the mix is actually a freshman from Liberty, Jay Beasley, who's 6'3", 250. The legs on this guy. Now, yeah, actually, you know, it was one of the things I did notice with the 2024s. Yeah, the freshmen who were in, who suited up. And then, you know what, even the guys who were visiting, right, all the rest of the 2024s, there is something, when you're recruiting big guys and linebackers and tight ends and bigger than that, there is something about a build where, listen, I don't know that I want my linebackers to be 6'3 and 210. Like, I want them to have some natural size. And a lot of that is going to come from the legs. Like, that's, you know, you see a lot of skinny guys. The dudes who are there, sidelines and on the field, who are 2024s, are just bigger than they've ever been.
Yeah, I think there's a priority on size. I think maybe that was probably a deficiency of Coach Odom, especially coming from SEC country and the South and being around that brand of football. Size matters. Yes. So when you look at the size of the guys that are in the program now, that are coming in, I think that is definitely been a recruiting emphasis. You want to get bigger in every position group if you can. And especially in the interior, the tree trunks, they matter. Moving guys laterally down the field comes from the base. And I think you got to have guys that play with good bases. So you would have been probably a great prospect because your calves are great. I think that maybe met the benchmark. Meet the benchmark of recruitment for UNLV at least these days.
We have to stop this.
Please drop a pause in
there. With Beasley, it was more the rear end and the thighs. And that was even like Charles Correa is another local dude. And I'm looking at him like, man, he's already got a good frame to work with to build up the top. And he's not a lineman. He's a tight end or a linebacker. So.
Yeah,
we all good on this? You guys getting all uncomfortable?
No, I was going to mention someone who also looks like a great athlete from what I saw at the spring practice that I went to, but I didn't want to mention size, but he is bigger for the position that he plays. It's Tony Grimes. Do you think that that inclusion of a big corner that's also an athlete, how is that going to change the way the corner position is played, at least on one side of the field?
I think what you can see is more isolated coverage when you have a guy that can literally hold his own. And being physical, just not when you look at size and kind of a stout cornerback with that kind of build, you think run support and that's what you think. But I think physicality in route running and in coverage matters as well. So I think you have a guy with that size you trust to kind of lock down a quarter of the field at times when you require it. We also know that there's a lot of different requirements for the DBs, whether it's corners or safeties, to be involved in run fits. So I think you have another guy that you're very confident sending up on run fits as a part of the design scheme of a defense. So I think that is big. I think you saw something too that was really a point of emphasis, especially if you're going to the taste in Rebel fans' mouths after the bowl game, was losing the 50-50 ball. Tony Grimes had two opportunities at a 50-50 ball this in the spring showcase, and he made the play and broke up passes intended for Ricky White. So he did a great job of showing that in his repertoire. He also was involved in some collisions, so the physicality was definitely there. But you're excited about that and the depth at the cornerback position. I think anytime you can have a guy that you can just call an island coverage for, the Revis Island is one of the main guys, but not that extreme. But anytime you can trust a guy in spurts to go man-to-man and take away a side of the field or take away an opponent's number one guy, I think you're excited about that. And I think Grimes has the potential to be that.
Caleb, what's your best impression coming out of the UConn National Championship two times in a row?
UConn's great. I mean, they were head and shoulders above everybody throughout this tournament. And it's unfortunate to say because for most of the tournament, their story was overlooked. Like, the storyline to track isn't always the person that's supposed to win. When you're talking about March Madness, we look for the Cinderella stories. They get a lot of the hype. UConn just kind of quietly took care of business, like winning by double digits, not a lot of excitement going on there, and really dominated – by playing a brand of basketball that I think is fun to watch. And it made me think of the most intense memories of college basketball of my youth, where it was ball movement, player movement, structure to the system, defensive energy and effort. There was so much to like about what UConn did and what they've done for the last 2 years, really, and to appreciate. Where does it rank among the all-time college great basketball teams? That's been a discussion. Obviously, Rebel fans have chimed in. Because we dwell in the 90s, and we will not let go of the fact that that was the greatest college basketball team ever assembled. So there's been that discussion, but that's kind of what dominant teams do. They provoke these thoughts of greatest of all time. I choose, though, to just enjoy UConn for what they are. In this day and age, in college football, it was refreshing to watch a team of basketball players dominate and do it in such a pleasing way as far as basketball IQ, basketball savvy, player movement, involvement, selflessness, everything you want as a coach, if I'm talking from a coach's perspective from a basketball team, UConn was this year. And they dominated the tournament, and they are crowned the champions, and rightfully so.
Caleb Herring, last one. Life etiquette question. This was a discussion we started earlier in the week. Adam Hill and I were treated out to a meal in Phoenix. It was a couple of UNLV guys. The one was kind of playing the role of big baller. I think he kind of is.
Yeah.
Adam looked at the menu and then tried to scurry and order one of the cheapest things.
The cheapest thing.
Is that what you do? Do you order in the middle? Is there a fear of insulting the individual because he's treating you? Or do you go right to the top of the menu? Hey, you're treating? I'm getting what I want.
Okay, so especially if you're getting the feeling that you said that this person was trying to flex and be a baller, you are obligated to test the flex. Like, I'm going to make you sweat this now. Like, I have to order like I would order for myself. I'm not going to mind your budget. You establish that you're treating, so you're going to treat. So, let's see. Pony up. I wouldn't go overboard with that. Like, I'm not going to order things that are out of character, but I like expensive steak. So, if there's an expensive steak at this place that you have declared you're treating me at, I'm going to order that steak. And you have to regret that and talk about that with the SO on why you spent $300 at a steakhouse with your friends. I'm sorry. That's out of my hands. Once you've decided to go out on a limb and treat me, I can eat. So we'll good luck with that, buddy.
It spiraled in so many directions, Caleb, because not only did I order the cheapest thing on purpose, somebody else at the table did the exact same thing. Then the person kind of got – I'm not saying upset that everybody ordered the cheapest thing, but he just ordered like seven appetizers. He's like, we're getting everything. And then there was something that I had said, that looks interesting, but I'm not going to go with it. I'm going to go with the cheap thing. And then he ordered that as an additional entree. And then it wasn't good.
Oh, he was insulted. This was This was a manhood challenge that you issued him by saying, what, you can't afford this? Are you broke? Are your pockets kind of empty over there?
Does it matter?
Let me take it easy on you.
Does it matter that they're drunk and they're probably going to regret it in the morning?
No, this is a part of learning. You have to learn that lesson. You have to wake up in the morning and wonder, what have I done? That is a part of this. That is the most humbling experience you can give to a man like that. Let him do it. And I will encourage him. Like, I'm the friend, especially if there's alcohol involved, I'm the friend that's egging him on. Yeah, you got it. You got it. And I might even know his financial situation.
I want to
be the one to say, well, you said it.
Yep.
We have so many etiquette questions that sprouted off that, because there was also an out. Never mind.
I was going to say, he's around the Hawaii athletic programs, and I may go in for a second dip and hang out with him and bring Caleb along, and let's see how it goes.
Yeah.
There's something I was very proud of Adam for, but I'm going to get to that after the break here. Caleb, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right, guys. Take care. Have a good one.
I lied. I just wanted to hurry Caleb out of here. I do want to mention, Damon, I actually was very proud of Adam Hill because I felt like it was a breakthrough. Because he is the sports world's martyr, right? So he starts it out with ordering something that he really didn't want. He wanted the short rib. Then his friend orders a short rib, but then, one, you're a dummy because you just let it sit there for like a half an hour. You should have grabbed it.
He
did it as a share for the table.
I thought it was for everyone, yeah.
So now you – but no one touched it, so now it's cold. And then Adam's right. He had a bite, and his friend had a bite, and they're both like, that is the worst short rib ever. And then the martyr went out the window. I actually saw for the first time Adam get pissed off at a restaurant, and he's like, where's the manager? Have them come over. You got to take that off.
Well, it's because I wanted
that. That was awful.
Because I wanted to help out.
Like, I've never seen him complain like that. I'm like, this is growth.
It was disgusting.
But I
wanted him.
He did that for real?
Yeah, because I wanted him to have at least some relief from the bill. Yeah. Like, nobody's eating it. You shouldn't pay for it. It was awful.
Did they come over and look at the bites?
How about this one, though?
No one called. I think then your friend was like, I don't return or I don't ask about food and taking it off the bill.
What if you're out with a group and you're ordering beer? And they're ordering something much more expensive. And then it's your turn to pick up the round, and you order the beer, and they're like, yeah, we're sticking with what we're getting.
Okay, you got to hold that.
I don't like that.
That doesn't sound like our experience. That's something that is a problem of yours. We'll rebuild that on the other side. And then we do have to get to the latest. I mean, the movement around Caitlin Clark coming to the WNBA and all these new events and attendance deals and then the TV deal, fascinating stuff.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Man, oh man. We have so much to get to in these final 30 minutes. And here comes reports from the transfer portal. I can't do it. Can't do it. So Masters starts up tomorrow. And Circa Las Vegas has a tremendous golf tournament viewing party. You going to go? You have time?
I'll try. It's fight week, which also, by the
that's
way,
good point.
Stadium swim for UFC 300. My goodness.
You know, that's what I was saying to Damon yesterday off the air. I'm like, okay. So they got four of the win starting up tomorrow. And then on Saturday, they'll have the double dip with the fights. But before that, the golf. So it's golf's biggest tournament viewing party. And how do you know that? Well, because it's a stadium swim. It can hold like 6,000, 5,000 out there. So that's going to be crazy, just the potential size of the crowd. 143-foot screen at Circa Las Vegas Stadium Swim for the golf. Authentic tournament fare. So we're talking ham and cheese sandwich, pimento cheese. They will have the signature Azalea cocktail. The authentic tournament fare is really authentic. It'll be at Augusta Prices. That's cool. And then they've got Top Shot celebrations for the win. Tomorrow all the way through Sunday, Circa Las Vegas at Stadium Swim. I'm sorry, I got sidetracked during the break. I know I shouldn't do this, but Grant Osabor, check that. Great Osabor, Utah State. This is just who he's heard from. Who knows?
Washington?
He's a good player. That was on the air, right? What? That part of that conversation last week?
It was.
With Danny Sprinkle, where he started talking about Grant Osabor, and he's like, oh, maybe I shouldn't do this.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's heard from Ohio State, Ole Miss, Oklahoma State, Seton Hall, Cal, USC. That, and by the way, I'm not complaining about my I was saying something during the break about Muss and USC. He freaking loves the portal. So USC, UConn, Grant Osabor. All right, Arizona State, St. John's, and Washington.
Oh, Washington got in there.
There you go. They got in there.
Good.
They're in.
I mean, I would say he's most likely going to Washington, but if UConn comes calling, you got to listen.
I mean, if you have a legit
depending on who their new coach
a national
is.
Championship, yes.
Yeah, depending on their new coach after early
yes.
Kentucky.
Your drink situation, can you explain that again? Because I was starting to think about the break.
I'm trying not to give. All right. You're out.
It wasn't around me. It was that.
It wasn't.
Okay.
Let's say you're out.
Yep.
And there's four of you. And you're drinking basically, again, the cheapest thing, like just a regular beer, whatever you're having. And some of the people there are having much more expensive drinks, like say three times as much. And then it's, okay, they bought the first round, another one bought the second. Now it's your turn to buy it.
You're screwed.
Is it that person's responsibility to be like, you know what, I'll take some. Especially if it's, say, like a wine where there's cheaper options. Can you be like yeah, give cheap? Me the.
15, so like, 15 instead bucks of, a glass and they're going 27 a glass?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Is it when it's the person that's that has the beer, is it their responsibility to be like, I'll take the cheaper one?
I think you just have to buy.
What? No.
I think you're screwed. This happens all the time. I don't drink anything expensive. I drink beers, and I don't know what max are going to be out is like 8 to 11 bucks, maybe 12, 13.
Yeah, there were 7.
Yeah. And then you're firing hard on like a $17 bottle of
especially glass it's wine. Like they're like just give me whatever it is. I don't know what the I don't know wine at all.
Me either.
Like,
so
give me the cheapest red. And you're like, okay. And you go to order it. Like, actually, no, make it. It's this one. Right. And you're like, I was going to get the, just say whatever. And now, I got to get the fancy one.
Take it.
That sucks.
Well, at least let it be known this is the only round I'm getting.
No. How about it? Is this okay? The person comes around again and they're like, oh, do you want, you know, so and so? You know what? That, and I'll do a shot of Jaeger.
Now they're just pounding drinks just to get them back.
Gotta get your value.
What are we doing? Do it within reason.
I think you just gotta have awareness. If you're the person drinking the more expensive drinks,
but then you're asking people to do the right thing.
People don't. You know at dinner, no one measures like if you got the $25 burger and they got the $60 steak. Hey, let's split it all even six know. Ways. Like, what? Wait, what? And you, I've seen it happen to you a million times.
Of course,
because you almost never drink.
Yeah.
So he's usually water or iced tea or soda. And then all the drinks are, that's the way it goes, man.
I know. It sucks.
You getting short on dough?
Is this just what happens when you get older real quick? Because as a young person, I feel like we are more, hey, we're itemizing everything.
Yeah. I think as we get older, you're expected to just have it.
No, here's what it is. I think Gen Zers, I say it all the time. I don't know about millennials, but I think my age, we're older, we're pansies. We're pansies and, because we don't want to say something, then we'd rather internalize it so we have a chance to bitch about it.
Sure.
Gen Zers are like, yeah. Hey, bro, $17 glass of wine. Beer for six. Let's go. Even it up.
I wish it was only 17.
That was more than that.
It's close to 30.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't think I'd be in this situation because I think the younger crowd, we would, or maybe some people would, hey, you know how much he makes, and you're going to make him pay for your third. Yeah.
Can you find me, this is out of nowhere, but can you find me Tarassi, was it Tarassi Old? And what was the other one?
And Tarassi in crowds.
Oh, yeah. I got to set this up again because we played it yesterday. I hope we didn't play it in this time slot. But either way, Adam wasn't here and people don't listen every second of the same hour each day. So I think we got to the roots of why Tarassi is sounding kind of bitter and jealous. And I'll point out again, we didn't put this music under it because it really adds a layer to it. But this was Diana Taurasi, GOAT. You know, I don't know if that's like a, you know, St. Louis Cardinals thing, your best fans in baseball, and I'm going to call myself the GOAT. This was her talking about how young athletes get all the love.
You know, this country has a fascination with young female athletes, and then it goes away, which I don't understand. You know, whether it's the young gymnast, the young skateboarder, the young pitcher, and then it's like once you become a professional, it all goes away. But that's the pinnacle. If you're the best in the pros, and you're the best in the world. And I think people have to still remember that when it comes to women's sports.
I mean, unless you really know about, like, all of Shaun White, people still love Shaun White. Clayton Kershaw is still beloved. What is this like? They just forget.
She's talking about women, Steve, okay? So, first of all.
She's saying guys can age gracefully in sports and women can't.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case. One, I will point out again, you made a comment about Sue Bird and how good she is on the show. I think you're smitten for her, so you're not objective.
I don't think that's true.
Okay. So she's making the case there that the old WNBA players don't get the love the new ones, and I guess the rooks do. I thought this was tremendous. Like, hey, everybody, the crowds are getting much bigger in the WNBA. Isn't that great?
Yeah, it's about damn time.
It's about damn time.
I mean, you know, where have all these people been?
I really appreciate the greats that have come before to lay the foundation to where, you know, we are now.
I have conversations with the older players, and you're like, it's finally got here.
These are athletes who are like late 20s, and in the case of Taurasi, he's like 41, and she's kids these days. By the way, how pissed off is Taurasi going to be when she finds out that 36 of the 40 Indiana Fever, Caitlin Clark games, will be nationally televised? So the anger sharks are swimming.
I feel like they're overplaying this hand big time too.
Could be.
And they're,
especially like you and many others are saying that she's not going to be that good.
No, she's going to be a good player. She's not going to be what she was in college. Of course, nobody is. Michael Jordan, LeBron wasn't what he was in high school, by the way. LeBron as a rookie was great. He wasn't what he was in high school. People are going to tune in wanting to see her score 35, 40 points every single game. And if she's scoring 27 a game, which would be an unbelievable season, it'll be the biggest disappointment in WNBA history. If she scores 27 a game, people will be like, what happened? She stinks.
But isn't this the point? Won't there be just as many people tuning in to watch her not excel?
No.
Who are those people?
No, I don't think so. Okay. People that don't like her don't care.
Is the boost enough from the...
She's not hated.
Is the boost enough from the Fox News crowd and the crowd that will weaponize her against LGBTQ players? Is that audience big enough to continue this boost?
No.
The WNBA...
They'll lose interest.
I mean, let's talk reality here. The WNBA can get boosted a lot. I pointed out the number yesterday. It was funny. One of our listeners and a guy who brokered a show, it just kind of fizzled out. Mike, there was some positive note about Caitlin Clark going to the WNBA the other day, and he's like, he tweeted out, like, let's watch the Aces beat their ass. And then something else about viewership, and he was like, the Aces are fine. They don't need it. No, they do.
Yeah. Of course they do.
The Aces in the WNBA final, the average viewership was 728,000.
Yeah.
Caitlin Clark just drew 15 and 20 million.
Yeah, if Caitlin Clark's in the finals, people are going to watch it. But they're not going to watch her on a random Tuesday night game.
I think
like late in the season.
I think they will have record numbers for viewership all throughout the season. The bar is so low.
Sure. Okay, sure. But I'm saying
that's still a positive.
People think, but what I'm telling you is it could be astronomical, but people are like, 15 million are going to watch Caitlin every. No, they're not.
I don't know anyone.
Because they're saying this wave is just going to continue. No, it's not. It's going to go away and it's going to go lower.
I think she will set
records. She's still going to raise it up, but it's not going to be to the point that people are. Everybody loves women basketball now. No, they like watching her in the tournament.
Every single one of her games. Okay. 90% of her games will set records for those games.
Yeah, they're not on. They were on once last year.
And then if you want to go back. Well, but that's why 36 of 40 are on. No one cared about the Indiana Fever before this. I think on Taurasi saying, well, it's about damn time. I think a lot of WNBA athletes, most of them, need to look in the mirror and go, what have we done wrong? What have we done?
Oh, so it's every player's fault that they haven't worked on the 3-point shot to shoot 30 footers.
No, it's every player's fault that they're not
interesting or accommodating.
That they're not, you know, just some very unassuming. Yeah, just like a very unassuming, regular person.
And I didn't say every.
Yeah, that they're actual athletes instead of somebody who looks like they're not an athlete, who, like, all those things. Like, that's why she's popular.
Well, I can tell you this. When media does show up, you probably don't want to be rude or dismissive.
Sure.
Heard some whispers about that happening later in the year.
So they should be appreciative of anyone who wants to
Absolutely.
Cover their sport.
Not anyone. If someone's a jabroni, but yeah, you should be appreciative. Yeah, in markets where these guys are all losing their jobs, I'm pointing to Adam, papers are shrinking. You think in major markets, newspapers have a WNBA beat writer? This is like the most unique market in the country for WNBA coverage. Yeah, I'll give you the example of being appreciative. I still think they're appreciative for the most part, except that the highest level fighters they made their money, and Dana White, who says he hates the media. I thought my experience covering the UFC like heavily from 2004 to whatever it was, 2017, I thought they were the most accommodating athletes. And especially, I mean, come on. We did remotes in the past. And I cannot remember the name of the place. It might be knocked down now. There's a giant two-story or three-story venue that was super popular on Sahara just to the west of Palace Station, and the parking lot, there was an entrance, and then it went up like three stories, and it was a massive space. Anyway, I can't remember the name of it, but I remember doing a remote out there, and it was like Chuck Liddell and Randy Couture both were with us in like 2005, because they got it. And I'm not saying I didn't say all the women in the WNBA don't appreciate the coverage, but they're still in a building mode. And I think some are like, now we've arrived. Now, why aren't you covering us? Now we're mad. Like, that's not the way it works anymore. And as you're growing, our side is shrinking.
But maybe for some of these athletes, it's that disconnect of the coverage that you get in college, and they don't understand the disconnect of why it's not there for the pros. Okay. And I'm not saying it's not their job to understand. You know, the way the media works, but if you go to, let's say, a UConn program, like, oh, man, like if you were Breonna Stewart, you're like, I won four national championships in a row. I'm not saying that she's unappreciative of media, but there might be that disconnect of why is the coverage less now that I'm a professional?
Aggressively, there's, what, 12 programs in women's college basketball that really have, like, more than three people covering them?
I'd say less.
But what coverage are they used to?
But those are the players that they are
really,
used to. I've heard them say the story.
Okay. By the way, sorry, I don't want to cut you guys off from responding. Tara Vanderveer is bye-bye. She's retiring, and people started freaking out last night about Lindy LaRocque at UNLV. But if you have listened to us over the years, Willie Ramirez is really good on this, and Willie has always said, well, she's not leaving for that job because they have a coach in
waiting. No, I didn't think Stanford would be that dumb. I truly thought that when it came time, because that was, you know, K-Pay was always the coach in waiting. It's part of why the narrative was that Lindy LaRocque left and came to start on her own. But if I'm Stanford, when they got the word that Tara Vanderveer was stepping down and she's like, yeah, time for Kate, I would have said, no, it's not.
You wouldn't have done anything. You don't know the situation.
We have no idea what she
on
is.
On the ground.
We have no idea what she is.
Okay.
We know what she is.
We know what Lindy
has done. We've seen her do it on her own. That's who we're going with. Not that Lindy would have said yes.
Yeah.
I'm just saying if my thought, because yesterday somebody called me immediately. I hadn't even seen the tweet yet.
Yeah.
And they were like, is Lindy gone? And I was like, if Stanford's smart, yes. And I said, look, they have a coach in waiting. I think the succession plan is there. They're going to hand it to her. But I think if there's people that are smart, and I think there are people that are smart there, they'll say, we know this was the plan. Not the plan anymore.
Text on my statement the last couple of days that women's college basketball is more popular than men's college basketball, and this will be the situation moving forward based on these TV ratings. We got a couple of texts on it earlier. It was like 45 minutes ago, you're saying. Or they bye-bye from the screen.
Okay, here we go. Let's pump the brakes a little. Let's pump the brakes a little. Next year, things go back to normal with Clark in the NBA. ESPN, and this is about the national championship game, ESPN 1 was on a Sunday. Okay, I get what they're saying now. One was on a Sunday, one was on a Monday, and didn't start until 9:30 East Coast time. And here's another one, and I love this one. Shout out to Manny. She ain't no John Cena, where you hated him, but you still went to see him.
Okay. I think that is the issue. But I do think that is the issue. Not, I mean, I'm not
she
acknowledging
have
that John
of,
Cena.
I love hate.
There's no haters.
It's just people who are rooting.
Yeah, because like she would be much better off if she had haters in terms of like some people are gonna watch to see her, some are gonna watch to hate her. The people that don't like her, are like I don't care.
God, I hope Angel Reese is awesome. Who was that guy we played? We played a guy from TikTok the other day, and it's like WNBA better embrace this. It's Bird and Magic all over again. Reese and Clark.
I got that one too.
It's gonna grow the league. No, we don't have to play it again. Let's come back, go into the grab bag. Oh, you know what? We have to – I want to give away these tickets here. We talked to Bubba Jenkins earlier today. We're going to have that up at lvsportsnetwork.com. He's a PFL fighter. PFL and Bellator are joining forces for a card this weekend, April 12th. Check that Friday night. That's the weekend. The event's at Virgin. AXS.com is where you go. Bubba's not on this card, but he was talking PFL in general, so he's up on the web here in a little bit. Two tickets. DeMond's got him for you. Caller 7-364-1100, 364-1100. This is MMA, PFL, and Bellator. If you want fight tickets, I can't tell people not to call in, but if you want fight tickets, call in right now, and DeMond's going to hook you up. 364-1100.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
So Adam missed out on a really fun time yesterday. We did about 20 minutes on WrestleMania with one Ryan McKinnell.
It's funny. I was going to tell you the wrestling news that actually matters just happened, so I'm trying to catch up on that right now.
Okay.
The CM Punk footage dropped.
Oh, get out of here.
What is this?
There's a.
Why is DeMond getting all worked up?
It's a big backstage altercation, and it was talked about, and there was movement and firings and dismissals, and it was a lot of fighting back about what really happened, and now AEW has dropped the footage of the fight involving CM Punk. So,
well, but who do you fight?
Jack Perry, the son of Luke Perry. This is the fight that led to CM Punk's dismissal from the company in AEW.
So, like a real fight?
Yes, yeah. It was a real fight, and CM Punk was fired, and Jack Perry was suspended, and has yet to be back on TV. And this happened in July.
How'd the fight look?
It's nothing.
It just dropped. It doesn't look like much.
It doesn't look like much, but Tony Khan said that I feared for my life, and that's why we had to release CM Punk. Oh, so, wow. It's a lose-lose situation in airing this footage, because it's either, hey, CM Punk beat the crap out of this guy and we have to let him go, or CM Punk really didn't do anything. He throws a couple of punches and Jack Perry gets out of the way. So why did you release your top star then? You look bad no matter what.
You calm down, man.
I feel like I got way too invested in the WWE, and then I hated what happened, so now I'm out again.
You hated what happened at WrestleMania?
Yeah, Cody stinks. I'm out.
He finished the story.
Yeah, that's stupid.
What does that mean? He stinks.
He's not. He's so not entertaining. First of all, The Rock also stinks now.
What?
He does. And whatever they did on Monday was the worst acting wrestling promotion nonsense I've ever seen. The crowd in the middle, Steve, just starts chanting like, "This is awkward," because they're like, "What is this?
What happened?"
They were arguing, but they weren't good. There was no like point. It was just so silly.
It was a callback to about 10 years ago.
It's fine. It was the crowd didn't seem to get it. Oh,
they don't know I'm ball out. Either.
Until my tribal chief gets his title back, I'm out.
My tribal chief.
I'm out.
Roman Reigns.
By the way, how did Meek Mill get involved that you found it intriguing at WrestleMania?
It was a bad choice of words.
Okay. His words or yours?
His. It wasn't good.
Oh.
You have the tweet right there.
In this life, either you finish your story or someone is going to finish it for you.
Yeah. His story just got finished.
Who, Meek Mills?
Yes.
Oh.
This one is this one, I guess you can tell me during the break or during the after the show. This one is absolutely over top.